Hackers want our voter data. Mark Zuckerberg gave a drone to the Pope. Fitbit wearables for swimmers and high-tech footballs. All that and a whole lot more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1587, recorded Monday, August 29th, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Trunk Club. Get clothes that fit and look amazing without ever stepping into a store again. Trunk Club will help you create the wardrobe you've always dreamed of with your own personal stylist. Go to trunkclub.com/TNT and join Trunk Club today.
And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT.
And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit TheTracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT for 30% off your entire order.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we keep you abreast of all the tech news that happened today and the not-so-distant past as
and
well.
Maybe the yesterday.
Maybe.
And maybe, probably not, but just maybe the yesterday to yesterday, which would be the day before.
The yesterday to yesterday. I'm Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell. Yeah, it's Monday. I can feel it in my bones. That's all I got.
All right, well, let's get to the tech news. The big news, the September Apple event has been confirmed for a week from Wednesday. That's September 7th at the Bill Graham Civic Auditorium in San Francisco. It will be 10 a.m. Pacific. Leo and I and some special guests, some friends, will be hosting a special live to cover everything they announce. I'm not going to lie to you. The only thing I'm hoping for is a blue iPhone. I want it to be blue.
You want it to be blue. This is a color that doesn't exist in the iPhone world at this point, right?
Yes.
Unless you're willing to go case.
But I have pink and like baby blue. I think they go together. Like babies.
Okay.
They're my babies. That's what I want. That we've covered this again and again. There won't be a headphone jack. There'll be a dual camera system. They're getting rid of these ugly little antenna lines, allegedly. You know, there might also be a new watch.
Yeah. So, and Bloomberg actually just had a post. What I was really hoping for with this, like, you know, all that stuff is great and everything, but what I really need, what we really need in our home is a new MacBook Pro. My wife's MacBook Air is like ancient and practically falling apart. It's practically duct taped together at this point.
That's sad.
And we know that a MacBook Pro is coming at some point, but apparently Bloomberg actually just published a story that their sources say we're not going to see it at this announcement. It's probably going to be released sometime in October, which would mean maybe an announcement or maybe a light announcement at some point after this presentation. So I'm kind of bummed about that.
Yeah, well,
I want that. I want
it. Sorry.
Actually, it's not even for me. It's not that I want it. I want it for my wife because she needs a new computer, dang it.
It's the sweetest thing I've ever
heard. Isn't it? It's kind of nerdy and sweet at the same time. But yeah, so and also, by the way, this is like announcement day. PlayStation is going to have their PlayStation 4 Neo event on the same day. So you have to imagine Sony's kind of sweating a little bit. Because I'm sure in the Venn diagram of iPhone and PlayStation 4, there's some sort of coverage. But when it comes to like media coverage and the thing that they put at the top of their page, I mean, which one do you think is going to trump? I'm not sure, but I'm guessing the Apple probably trumps over Sony. And Sony's like, dang it.
I know. Well, they announced their event a couple of weeks ago, said it was going to be September 7th. And it was rumored that Apple, and I'm sure they would have done it a different day, but it's going to be the iPhone 7 probably. So they couldn't back down on the September 7th. That was too.
I know. Poor Sony. Mm-hmm. I just feel bad for Sony. That's all. The temperature is rising as we get closer to the presidential election here in the U.S. You can feel it in the air. This time around, there are significant concerns around hacks that involve the election system, probably more than any other election in the U.S. to date. And along those lines is today's news that the FBI is investigating the intrusion of two state election databases. The two states under investigation were not named specifically by the FBI, but sources tell Yahoo News that Arizona and Illinois were the ones breached by foreign hackers in recent weeks. The FBI is warning election officials across the U.S. to take precautions to increase security for their systems to prevent something bigger. I guess at first the intrusion wasn't necessarily deemed as a threat to the election. And then once they've started really digging into it, the FBI realized that there was theft of voter registration data from one election site. I think that was Illinois is where that was pulled from. Up to 200,000 state voters' information in Illinois.
So do they think it's just like an ID theft thing? Not like they're not trying to change the course of the election with this hack.
Yeah, well, I mean, in this specific case, it seems more relegated to database and theft of data. What they don't know is, you know, there's a lot of things that are kind of bubbling right now around. You know, there was the DNC hack. Mm-hmm. There's this kind of ongoing suspicion of Russian hackers. You know, penetrating different places, different systems in the U.S. So there's all of these things that are happening simultaneously. There's no link specifically here to the Russian hackers or to the DNC, but I think there was like one IP address that surfaced somewhere, in a known area in Russia where some hacks have happened. So there's maybe a tiny sliver of clue at this point, but it just kind of points to the possibility, the growing possibility, or just kind of the realization that this is a target, and it's a target that will be exploited at some point. Like, I don't think that this is necessarily a matter of if. It's a matter of when does it happen. This election cycle, I don't know, but there's so much going on right now. It's kind of hard to think that it's not at least a target.
Yeah, and our voter information is sacred. Like, you would never want someone to say, like, oh, I'm scared that my information's not going to be safe. I'm not going to register to vote. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's our right to vote, and then anything that gets between us and our right to vote is a huge deal. So this is no good.
Yeah, and a lot of people, obviously, for good reason, hold a lot of the information that would be found in these databases close to their vest. You know, even if it's just the party that they identify with, like, there are a lot of people that don't necessarily want people to know that. There are a lot of people that want everyone to know what party they are with. But there are a lot of people that would just prefer keep that to themselves. And this could be very revealing. You know, this sort of information could be very revealing. But like expanding out to the voting process itself, like there's no evidence that this would directly, relate to that specifically. But you have to think like it's a big target, right? Like states, there are states with electronic voting and no paper trail attached to that. So that's a huge risk. Absentee votes that are placed online for, residents outside of the country, let's say, that's another, potential target. So I don't know. I hope that does not happen, but it very well could.
Mm-hmm. Well, you might remember that Mark Zuckerberg's New Year's resolution was much more industrious than yours was, and he's actually keeping his. Recode reports that the Facebook CEO plans to unveil a demo of his robot butler next month. He made the announcement at a town hall meeting in Rome, where he's also paid a visit to the Pope, to whom he gave a drone. Don't get too excited. It wasn't a working drone, but it was rather a model of Facebook solar-powered Aquila aircraft. It's nice, though.
A tiny little model. Look at that dainty drone statuette.
So the butler is supposed to respond just to his voice. It doesn't even respond to his wife's voice, which mm-hmm. is interesting. It controls the temperature, the lighting, will help him with his work. So I'm excited to see his robot butler.
He says it currently opens the security gate when he approaches. That was one of his plans. Like you said, it doesn't respond to Priscilla's voice, which is strange. But hey, I suppose you got to start somewhere. And maybe he's more interested in testing this out than she is. I don't know. But Zuckerberg's original plans for this when he first announced it for Butler were smart home control. So he's kind of doing that, controlling temperature, controlling security gate, friend recognition. So it sounds like maybe he hasn't quite got there yet, friend/spouse recognition. Should probably work on that. Automatic entry from security systems. He's got that. And alerts for his daughter when she needs something. So there's much ground to cover at this point. It's kind of starting point for his butler.
It makes me think of Silicon Valley. I know you didn't watch Silicon Valley, but
no, I've seen Silicon Valley.
Remember the guy that is the millionaire that has a thing that he's like, I don't have to tell my kids to go to bed because like there's a voice that says it's time to go to bed, and like he doesn't have to be the bad guy. That sort of reminds me.
It's exactly like that. Actually, I hadn't made that connection, but that's totally what's going on here. Hopefully, he's not using his butler to put the kid to bed, though.
Let's hope not. Let's hope. What's also notable about this story is that Zuckerberg planned this trip to Italy after the earthquake to tour around as if he were a politician. I mean, that's what politicians do after disasters. They go to areas and they, you know, show their face and say, I'm concerned about you. And, you know, so he went there. I just wonder if this is a portent for things to come, that like those are going to be the people that do that sort of work, not our political leaders, but our Mark Zuckerbergs.
Well, and Zuckerberg has devoted, you know, very publicly devoted the majority of his insane wealth to charitable. You know, I don't know if he's really necessarily done much to that effect yet, like really kind of, you know, spreading that around specifically. And I don't know that it's necessarily being reported exactly what his plans are to do with that, but he's devoted most of his money to charity. So, yeah, I guess this is just part of it. Like once you become a bazillionaire, you either just sit around sleeping in your bed of money and spending it all over the place, or you kind of go for the greater good, which is what it seems like Zuckerberg, to a large degree, plans to do with all this fortune. You know,
right?
Yeah, make it rain where it needs to rain.
Well, that's what Bill Gates did too, of course, like the Gates Foundation. But I don't ever remember thinking, you know, he wasn't the same like face as Zuckerberg was, you know. So he wasn't giving drones to the Pope, as far as I know. If he was
until he retired from the technology industry, and then you know he was a little bit more visible in that way. Zuckerberg's way younger than Bill Gates was. Zuckerberg's still not retired, of course, yet this just kind of seems to be part of what he does, because Facebook's just such a monster. It's practically running itself. That's probably not true, but it seems that way from the outside. Alphabet is used to shooting for the moon, but what exactly has come out of those moonshots up to this point? We hear about movement in some of Alphabet's moonshot projects, big name hires in its self-driving car efforts, as well as veteran hires of people involved deeply in broadband to help make things like internet balloons a reality, in the case of Project Loon. But according to Mark Bergen from Recode, internally, Alphabet's X division is seen as an ineffective effort. Things sound great from the outside, but moving them into actual products has proven to be next to impossible. And, you know, in the article, he blames kind of politics inside of the company, unmanageable red tape from the inside. People who are working in the department just say they get frustrated, and they ultimately are leaving because of the fact that there are all these grand visions, you know, possibilities, ideas, but that never ends up in an actual product. And, that over the, you know, even Astro Teller, who leads the X division, says he's increasingly frustrated by all this stuff.
I'm going to not compare this story also to Silicon Valley, but
I was going to. Don't worry, go for it.
But no, it is that moment where, like, it's like, God, the weirdest things in satire are showing up every day. Like, that's exactly, totally reminds me of that group in the show. But I mean, they're like, the team's headed to Burning Man. That's part of what Bergen said. Like, they totally shut down this week, so they go to Burning Man. And I'm not surprised they're not doing anything. And I do wonder if this is just the place where they put people they don't know what to do with.
I had in my notes here, I can't tell if Silicon Valley is imitating X or if X is imitating Silicon Valley, which is just, you know, the similarities are kind of striking. But I mean, Astro Teller says the Moonshot Factory is a messy place. He said that multiple times. I guess it's been $1 billion per year budget for X. Bonuses are actually offered, and I don't know if they still are. I think this was pre-Alphabet kind of reorganization, but bonuses were offered to those who were able to kill their projects, because basically, you know, the thinking being, if it's worth killing the project, then we can focus on the things that don't die, essentially, and bring those up. You know, it's not like they aren't seeing progress to some degree. You know, certain things have graduated out. The car, the autonomous car project seems to be going well and seems to actually be resulting in some sort of a real product at some point. But I don't know, you know, and they keep reporting losses outside of Google. Alphabet's, you know, last, I think it was 2015, reported $3.5 billion in loss. So then you figure that out.
Well, also, it's, you know, big companies like this do have a lot of ideas, and a lot of them don't ever work. I mean, I was talking to Leo on iOS today about, Apple's apparently thinking of creating a Snapchat thing. And he's like, they're thinking of everything. Like, everybody, you know, Apple is thinking of everything. And he's totally right. Like, there's just all these projects, and they're just seeing what works. And they have enough money to do that. Google does, and Apple does. So, yeah, we're just here reporting on it. And
along for the ride.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Well, today Fitbit announced the Charge 2 and the Flex 2. The Charge 2 is an update to its most popular fitness wearable. The new one is available for pre-order today for $150. It features a larger 1.5-inch screen, additional menus, and connected GPS, which means you'll have to have your phone with you if you want to use that GPS. There's still no touchscreen, and also the $100 new slimmer Flex 2 is available for pre-order today, and that one's designed for swimmers. Which is exciting because I can't, I don't think I can wear my Apple Watch swimming in the water. And then I always feel sad about that because I don't get the exercise. So
you also get, if you get one of these, you get the guided breathing sessions.
Oh,
two
right.
Minutes of mindfulness. I guess kind of specific tracking to different sport modes. So exercise tracking for a number of things like, you know, and some of these they already have, but running, biking, weightlifting, yoga, specifically all as detailed in the app post-workout. So kind of spreading it out into other avenues, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to probably hear a lot of wearable announcements coming up this week. It's IFA
yep.
in Berlin. Padre is going to be there. So I think that Fitbit was just kind of getting out in advance of that.
Get it out and move along. Yeah, and apparently, I guess they're updating software for some of their other other wearables. Blaze and Alta are getting a software update, new notifications, new clock faces, new mode reminders. And yes, you're right. There's going to be at least the Gear S3. I know I've seen leaked photos for the Samsung Gear S3 for IFA, so we've got that to look forward to.
Right. And so we haven't tried any of these, but I do know that if you're deciding between the McDonald's wearable that comes with a Happy Meal and this one that doesn't burn your hand,
probably want to go with a McDonald's one because it comes with a burger. Up next, we take a look inside the football, and I promise you there's some technology in there. But before that, let's take a minute to thank Trunk Club. They are the sponsor of this episode. Take it from me, super tall dude, shopping is frustrating. You find yourself wandering from store to store only to find clothes that don't fit or they're not what you're looking for exactly. And now, thanks to Trunk Club, you can get clothes that look great and fit perfectly without ever stepping into a store again. With Trunk Club, you can easily upgrade your wardrobe with fall essentials like blazers and button-downs for men, sleeveless coats, sweater dresses for women. Just type in your measurements and share your style and spending preferences to connect with the right Trunk Club stylist for free. Your stylist will contact you by phone, email, or messenger, and they'll do that to kind of get a better understanding of your unique look and learn more about what you like and what you're looking for. Your stylist will select items for your trunk from over 80 top brands and will send a preview of clothes that may be a good fit. Review your trunk by email and make edits before it's shipped right to your door. Then you'll have 5 days to try on the clothes, keep what you like, send back what you don't, keep, you know, send back the rest, and, you know, then wait for another trunk, basically. Trunk Club is not a subscription service, and shipping is always free. Trunk Club is backed by Nordstrom, which means they have the highest standards in quality and customer service. And if you live in Dallas, New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, or D.C., you can stop by one of the Trunk Club clubhouses to work with your stylist in person for free. It's premium clothes, expert advice, no work, thanks to your very own personal stylist at Trunk Club. Get started today at trunkclub.com/TNT. Check it out for yourself. That's trunkclub.com/TNT. And we thank Trunk Club for their support. All right, look, I know some of you don't care about sports ball. You'd rather not think about how to make a touchdown on the court while skating a base hit. But I'm here to tell you that there's some cool technology ending up inside footballs at this season's NFL preseason. Joining us to help get us ready for some football is Kurt Wagner from Recode. How's it going, Kurt?
Hey, nice. Hey, that was quite the intro right there.
Well, you know, I spend at least 3 hours crafting that masterwork.
That was something.
Maybe not, but I probably should have and come up with something better. So what exactly is the NFL putting inside these footballs?
Yeah, the NFL is testing some sensor technology. So these little, they're like about a quarter size. So they're pretty small. They're very lightweight. I'm not exactly sure how heavy, but can't be more than an ounce or two. And they're putting these sensors inside the footballs for all of the preseason games. For those of you who aren't sports ball fans, there are 4 preseason games that are happening right now before the regular NFL season kicks off in just a few weeks. And essentially what they're... I'm sitting in a room and all the lights turned off. Essentially what they're doing is, trying to gather in-game data, right? So like how far are these balls being thrown, how fast, what's the acceleration, all that stuff. And they're hoping to use it for broadcasts and also to give back to the teams so that the teams can, you know, just kind of know more about what's happening on the field and hopefully use it for training or other purposes.
Yeah, I mean, they're already collecting so much data. I mean, sports and statistics kind of go hand in hand. I feel like we're entering this very interesting world right now where technology and statistics are coming together to make sports even more statistically deranged to the point to where you can get so into the minutia that it's just kind of blows you away. I have to imagine, though, that this is really beneficial to how teams craft their games, right?
Well, that's what you'd like to think. I think you bring up a good point, which is that like all this data really only matters if you have something to do with it, right? Simply collecting it and just letting it sit on a hard drive or in a file, unless you have reason for collecting it, doesn't do a whole lot. But I think, you know, when what we've seen from the NFL so far, they've just started also collecting actual player data. So they're the same company that puts the sensors in these footballs. Is also putting sensors in player shoulder pads and has been for the last couple of seasons. And, you know, I guess you could imagine if you get to, you have a game on Sunday, you get to practice on Monday, and you look and say, oh, wow, we didn't realize Kurt, you know, he ran twice as much as everyone else on the team, or he really was exerting, you know, more energy or less energy or whatever. That could change how you train, how you recover. So I don't necessarily know if the football data is going to help, like, with player safety and player injuries. But you could see how just collecting this stuff more broadly, there's a lot of different use cases for it. And the league is all, you know, everyone's going to be looking for an upper hand. I mean, this is a huge business. And so if you can collect it, you should collect it is kind of the mindset, and then figure out what to do with it maybe a little later.
What exactly in the ball itself, what kind of data is being collected here?
Yeah, so it's going to be basically I've been told to think of these sensors as kind of like a GPS. So anything location related, which means distance, velocity, acceleration, all of that kind of stuff. And I would think for the footballs themselves, I want to reiterate that at this point, the NFL is only using them for the preseason. They could use them for the regular season this year. The league has not yet decided if they're going to. The NFL, like most big, you know, companies and organizations, they like to do a test, look at all the results, see is this something we should carry over. I imagine eventually they will get there, whether it's this season or next season. I don't fully know. But yeah, most of this is like GPS related stuff. And so that's what you'd be able to find.
So if I stole one of these footballs, they would be able to track me down wherever I went.
They would hunt you down. Yeah, I'm sure. Although if we're talking for real, no, they wouldn't be able to hunt you down, because once the sensors get out of a certain radius, they're no longer, you know, the way they work is the stadiums have these little receivers all throughout the stadium, like these little square dishes, I guess, and they will ping the sensors and get the data. So I guess once you got out of the range of the receivers, you'd probably be safe. But yeah, they might hunt you down if you're inside the stadium.
I have to imagine when you're talking NFL or pretty much any major league, you know, sport, these game balls, the balls that they're actually playing with, are intensely regulated down to the point of how much they're inflated and all this kind of stuff. You know, the size, all that stuff. Does this interfere at all with that? I mean, it's, you know, inserting something new into a ball that you normally would not do.
Right. I mean, that's, I pointed out in my article, is like the NFL is hyper-focused about what goes inside of these footballs as you would imagine, given obviously the Deflategate thing. For those of you who aren't football fans, there was an issue a couple of seasons ago about the Patriots and potentially letting some air out of the footballs to make them, you know, easier to catch and throw and all that stuff. These sensors don't measure air pressure, which I find fascinating, because that seems like an obvious thing to measure, especially given this Deflategate issue that we've seen. But yeah, I think like obviously that's why this is a test period, right? Like that's why they're using it for preseason. They haven't approved it for the regular season yet, and we'll see if they do. And I think the point of all this is just to make it equal to everybody, right? So whether or not they add these sensors or they don't, as long as everyone's using the same football with the same sensors inside, I don't really see a problem with it. I mean, they're so lightweight, you can barely even tell you're holding them. But yeah, the NFL is hypersensitive to what goes inside these footballs, as we've learned, and so they're definitely putting a lot of thought into this.
My final question, because I feel like this is a no-brainer. I mean, air pressure, yes, that makes sense. What about a camera inside the football? Make that happen. I want to see POV of the football flying through the air.
I was going to say, well, you wouldn't want it inside the football. Then what are you going to look at? You need the camera. You need the GoPro football camera, right?
Yeah. You know, like looking out of the end of the ball on both sides.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it might make you a little sick. You should do that in VR and see how long you last before you have to run to the bathroom. But
that's
yeah, we'll see. I'm sure it's only we only are seeing more and more of this stuff, not less and less. So it's probably only a matter of time.
For sure. All right, Kurt Wagner, thank you so much for joining us. Always a pleasure getting you on. Tell people where they can follow your work.
Yes, please, at recode.net or at Kurt Wagner 8 on Twitter. We do a lot of great stuff. Come check it out. Thank you, guys.
You absolutely do. All right, have a good night. Talk to you soon. Bye. All right. John wrote to clarify a few things that we talked about in our interview with Nicole Lee from Engadget about Facebook open sourcing their computer vision. John writes, in the iOS screen reader built into the iPhone is called VoiceOver. It's built into all Macs and iOS devices. It's not scanning the page. It's an actual screen reader. Also, the Facebook app is pretty accessible. I know when you upload pics, you can put alt tags in there yourself, but who does? And that's so true. Most don't think about it. I will never forget the first day the Facebook app said something like, image may contain one person. Before that, there was nothing at all to tell a blind user what the picture is of. And now it's gotten a little better. This automatic alt tagging works with Facebook on TalkBack, Google's screen reader. And yeah, and kind of what we were talking about last week is like any sort of added context is better than absolutely no context whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to like those of us with sight, a descriptor like that, one person, might seem kind of pointless and useless, but that's better than nothing whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, new research says speech recognition is faster than texting. Sherry Ruin from Stanford University explains. But first, let's take a minute to thank ZipRecruiter, the sponsor of this episode. If you need to hire someone, you can't just send out good thoughts into the universe and hope that person comes to you. You have to go out and find them by posting your jobs on all the top job sites. And with ZipRecruiter, now you can. Posting jobs in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to more than 100 job boards, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Just post once and watch your candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. ZipRecruiter offers optimized pages that look great on any screen. You can add their unique mobile apply process for more visitors and applicants. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. You can add multiple users to your account. You can quickly screen candidates with real-world questions. You can use free-form, multiple-choice, or yes or no formats. Then you can view your candidates' responses in conjunction with their beautifully formatted resumes. You can rate them, and then you can hire the right person, and fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 1 million businesses. More than 125 million candidate applications have been delivered. Right now, you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Tech News Today. If you were an early adopter of speech-to-text, you probably remember how laughably wrong voice recognition was. If you haven't used it since then, you might think about giving it another try. A new study from Stanford says that speaking to our mobile devices is a lot faster than typing on them. Joining us to discuss the research is Stanford computer scientist Sherry Ruin. Welcome. So your study says that speech is three times faster than typing for English and Mandarin text entry on mobile devices. Tell us a little bit about how you came to this conclusion.
Okay, sure. So in our research, we compare the people's performance in typing against the performance in using one of the most advanced speech recognition systems, Baidu Deep Speech 2. So we recruited 32 speakers. And we asked them to transcribe 100 sentences, like just selected randomly from like our database. And our research and our results showed that their speed, the speed of speech recognition system is about three times faster than typing. And people also made less mistakes when they used the speech input method.
I guess that makes sense. I mean, we weren't really designed to type on these tiny keyboards. We've been speaking for longer. Is that what the conclusion is?
Sorry? Could you repeat your question again?
So is it that we've been speaking for longer, speech is what we're more used to? Is that why we're faster at it than typing on the tiny keyboards?
I guess my intuition is that, like, speech is actually like a more natural way for human beings to communicate, because, you know, like our fingers are never designed to tap on this tiny like screen on mobile devices. Instead, like people have been communicating with each other using speech like for like thousands of years. So that's why we envision that in near future, like speech will become like a dominant way for people to communicate with their devices and hence like communicate with other humans.
Yeah, I can see that as kind of the way that we're heading into a world where we do talk to our devices more than we do right now, even though they're pretty capable of understanding, you know, the words that we're throwing at them in noisy environments and all that kind of stuff now. But there's also a bit of kind of reprogramming of our habits. Like we're used to talking to people. People are used to talking to each other. We're not used to necessarily talking to our phones. I mean, is this something that over time we try and do it, and we're represented with a situation where it actually works well, and so we're enlightened to use that again going forward? Or I don't know. It seems like there's kind of like a speed bump that we have to get past so that people will actually talk to their phones in these ways.
Yeah, I agree. I think like when it comes to using speech in our real life, there are actually many factors to consider. Like for example, speed and accuracy are definitely the most important thing. But there are also you also have to consider the actual like the social scenario. For example, it might be awkward to talk in public occasions. And also, when we did our study, like we found some past research which shows that the same cognitive and memory resources that are used in speech production are actually used in problem solving as well, which means that like human performance when it comes to text composition would be like inherently hindered because of that. So because of all these factors, we actually do not expect that the current typing keyboard will be replaced by like speech-based input methods completely. But we do hope that in the near future, like there will be more researchers and designers who can develop more speech-based user interfaces, which can leverage speech recognition. For example, we might have a speech interface which allows the user to activate a GUI, a graphical interface, using their voice, and then they can switch between speech and typing depending on the actual scenario.
So tell us a little bit about Deep Speech 2, the AI that was used in your research.
Okay, sure. So in our research, we actually decided to test the typing performance against Deep Speech 2, which is one of the the most advanced commercial speech recognition system nowadays. It is developed by Baidu, and it can recognize both English and Mandarin. I guess the major difference between Baidu's Deep Speech 2 and the old speech recognition system is that it actually relies entirely on machine learning for transcription. For example, a lot of speech systems before used many steps to make the transcription, which means that they use hand-engineered representations in between. But in Deep Speech 2, they actually use an artificial neural network that learns what is relevant in the audio and how to transcribe it directly. Because of this end-to-end approach, this actually allows us to handle a diverse variety of speech, including noisy environments, also accents, and different languages, which are used to be the big challenges for old speech systems.
So we've definitely seen a lot of improvement. Thank you so much for joining us, Sherry. Where can people access this research?
Okay, sure. So we already published our results, a research paper on RCAP. We also made a project webpage, which is hosted on Stanford HCI website, and people can access both at our website or our archive. We also make a YouTube video, and we post that online as well.
Great. Thank you so much, Sherry. Sherry is at Stanford, and she's Sherry S. Ruan. That's Ruan on Twitter. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Sherry.
Okay, thank you very much.
Have a good night.
TNT's fan of the day is Pedro from the Bronx, who sent us this photo of him watching our show on the big screen.
That's right. Tech news up on the big screen, occupying the living room. I'm guessing. I haven't seen it yet. Okay, there we
there
go.
There it is.
It's like we're looking down upon you from our table. Maybe we are today, too, because you're watching this there, too.
I'm always surprised that people watch us on such big screens, but thank you.
I just got home. I got nothing to do. I'm going to turn on the TV and watch this tech news show. I'm humbled. What can I say? It's awesome that you choose to put this on your big screen TV. That's great.
Yes. Thank you for watching. Any way you watch, we want to see it. So tag your pictures, How I Watch TNT. Put them anywhere. Twitter, Facebook, Google+.
Up there. That's masterfully done, Brian. Are you watching us now? This could get real Inception, right? Like having the video in the video in the video.
Yes, thanks Audio for watching us, no Pedro from the about. Bronx.
All right, up next. So you think that you can fly a commercial drone? There we go. We're down from the TV set now. Prepare to be regulated. But first, let's take a minute to thank The Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. We've seen all sorts of advancements in technology, things like smart cars, smart phones, smart homes. We take a lot of them for granted, to be honest. But losing your possessions can make you feel less than smart. And Tracker makes losing things a thing of the past. So it's like problem solved. The Tracker Bravo locates misplaced keys, wallets, computers, backpacks, bicycles, even pets in seconds. The coin-sized device is constructed with anodized aluminum for the thinnest, most durable tracking. You can easily attach it to your items with a key loop included, or adhesive. Tracker is enabled by Bluetooth LE, so the battery lasts up to one full year. You can add a laser engraved message to each Tracker Bravo, like return or pet information if you want to use it on a collar. And you can now personalize your tracker with a custom printed image. You can see right here, I've got this little Tech News Today tracker in here. You can't have it, but you can make your own. You can print your own custom images on the tracker to kind of personalize it for whatever you happen to be attaching it to. Pair Tracker to your iOS or Android device and find its precise location with the tap of a button. It's really just that easy. Your phone can track up to 10 devices at one time. You can also customize two-way separation alerts, so you're notified before you leave your item behind. If you lose your phone, you just press the button on Tracker and your phone will ring even if it's been left on silent. Now, Tracker Atlas works with your Tracker Bravo or third-party Bluetooth tracker to pinpoint your items on a customizable floor plan of your home. You'll save time and energy by, all you got to do is just ask Tracker Atlas where your item is, and then you'll instantly get the answer. You won't need to search for it. With over 1.5 million devices, Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world, so when your lost item shows up on a map, even if it's miles away, you're gonna find that lost item. Because it's right there on the map. If you lose your item, the Tracker app records its last known location on a map. And then when another Tracker user comes within 100-foot range of your item, you'll receive a GPS update of where your item is located. Go to thetracker.com and never lose your possessions again. Plus, just for our audience, if you enter promo code TNT, you'll get 30% off your entire order. That's thetracker.com, promo code TNT for 30% off your entire Tracker order, and we thank Tracker for their support. I guess you could put one on a commercial drone. Commercial drone regulation is upon us.
I have mine on our personal drone.
Oh, well, yeah, you could do that too. Mm-hmm. Commercial or personal drone, either way. Commercial drone regulation is effective in the U.S. starting today. Anyone 16 or older can sign up to take a written test and submit to a background check that, if passed, would allow them to fly their commercial drone during the daylight hours within plain sight. It also requires them to keep the craft below 400 feet, from the ground. In the first day of testing, some 3,300 people signed up to take that test and get started with the drones, the official way, the legitimate way.
Legit drone flying.
Legit commercial drone flying.
So they think that it's going to exceed then the number of the nation's pilots, like private pilots, the people that are getting commercial drone licenses. That's 171,000 private pilots.
The restrictions here are a lot less. I think this is the only pilot certification by the FAA that doesn't require demonstrating some sort of flying skills. So I think, it's just a little bit more wide open when you're talking about drones versus, getting an actual pilot's license, which, I guess was kind of
required prior. Before this, commercial drone operators had to have a standard pilot license, which seems like overkill when you're talking about drones, I suppose. But when it's, you know, when you're talking about commercial flight, maybe that makes a little bit more sense.
So do they have to take a class or anything, or they just get licensed?
They don't have to take a class, although many plan to, right, to make sure to pass this. It's basically, it's a written test. It's just, you just pass the test. The test costs $150. If you can prove you got the knowledge, then you can fly commercial drones under these rules. And there are some exceptions, like they can apply things like nighttime flight. There are ways to kind of work it so that you can get cleared for that as well. It's just not part of the standard clearance. But yeah, so I guess this means that we're going to see lots more drones flying overhead carrying cases of beer. And many people jumping drinking. To try and grab them.
No drinking and droning.
No.
No drinking and droning.
Yeah. Ooh, I wonder if that'll be a thing, right?
I think it's already a thing.
It's
like
already a thing?
The guy that crashed a drone into the White House lawn was drinking and droning.
Oh, I forgot about that. You're right. So it probably is a thing.
Yeah. No All texting right. and droning.
That's probably, that's probably wise. Tell us if you get cleared for a commercial drone flight, tnt@twit.tv. You can also leave us a voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. We record live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m., I think, UTC at twit.tv/live. You can also find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV. I'm really sorry, Greg, because I went out of order. Whatever. It was too late for me, and you were just over there sweating bullets. I apologize.
We're in a new studio. Tickets at twit.tv to come see us and sit in our new studio. Also, we have some limited time only shirts and mugs and hoodies. They have a great design.
And with the East Side Studio logo,
yes,
right?
Yes. Yeah. Anthony's East Side Studio logo. So you can get those, but just for a limited time. So you can go to the website and get those. We'll have a link on our website. You can also subscribe to our show. Please do. Go to twit.tv/TNT. Find all the ways to subscribe. And please tweet at me. I am at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Brian Burnett. Thanks to Greg, who I totally threw off. I think we've recovered at this point. Greg Burnett for the words, Kevin for editing, and pretty much everyone else that makes us look good and makes this show a lot of fun. And thanks to you for talking tech with us. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everyone.